Good evening, family. My name's Mike. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is a vision for you on Thursday nights in Union. It's the only Thursday night meeting in Union. Please come check us out. I don't want to do a whole lot of setup. I did a lot last week. I do want to say that my sobriety date is October 1st of 2008, so yesterday was 8 years. And that's by the grace of God. And thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous for assisting me to get to that. The word recovered you can find on page Roman numeral 8, and why I use it you can find on page 90. I got more into depth with that last week. So what we did last week was we talked a lot about what is this book. You know, and it's precisely how we recover. The instructions are in here. It's a textbook. And this is how I found a way out. Really briefly, again, I don't want to do a lot of review. I'm not going to do this every week, but I probably will in the first step because people will wonder why I'm skipping around. I've had three experiences with the 12 steps. I was taken through it page by page, 1 hour a week, and that took about 3 months to get through the first two steps. At about a year sober, I went through the 12 steps with a man who was taken through the steps. His sponsor was taken through the steps by Bill Wilson, the way they did it before there was a book. And it was a 12-hour process. The fourth and fifth steps were really 23 questions designed to extract the character defects that I'm going to ask God to remove in seven. And in the way I do it now, generally I sit down with the sponsee for 3.5 to 4 hours the first time we meet, get a good understanding of the first step. Hopefully they've had a second step experience. Hopefully they're willing to believe that this might possibly work for them. We get on our knees, we do a third step, and they go home and write. And generally, the people I work with write a fourth step in 12 days or so, on average about 12 days. And again, this is just the process I do. I call it getting people off the ledge. Most of the people I sponsor tend to be people who've been in and out for years and have read the first two steps over and over and over. But possibly haven't had their first step experience or haven't been willing to do something in the process. I don't know. But anyways, I find us on page Roman numeral 28, XXVIII. And we've talked a lot, a little bit about the mental and spiritual, but we've talked a lot about the physical, this allergy. And that I needed that word defined for me as an abnormal reaction to a normal substance. That my abnormal reaction to alcohol, a normal substance, was quite the opposite of my abnormal reaction to penicillin. Penicillin, my body rejects it. Alcohol, my abnormal reaction is it wants more and more and more and more and more. And we talked about how no human power can really suffice, is strong enough to get me to stop drinking. The frothy emotional appeal, the begging and crying of my mother, the consequences, the incentives, none of those things. I had sufficient reason. I had good reason to stop a lot of times, but for whatever reason, I couldn't. And I want to move down to the first full paragraph, or the last full paragraph on that Roman numeral 28. And it says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. I want to break that down and then move on a little. So, Mike, you know, I often like to pose things here as questions to myself. Like later on, we get to the three pertinent ideas. I reword those as questions. But I also like to, and I said this last week, put my name in here instead of we or us or men and women. Because, like, when I see the word insanity in step two, I can give a pretty good definition of that word, but I can't apply it to myself. I really have a problem applying insane to myself. Though the fact that I drank the last time that I drank after what happened the time before and the time before and the time before is absolutely insane. You know, I talked about this last week too. The insanity of my alcoholism isn't all the stuff I do when alcohol is in my system. That's kind of just science. Phenomenon of craving aside, when you put the amount of alcohol into your system, when a human being puts the amount of alcohol into their system that I had been putting into my system, the things that I did are actually pretty normal. That's what a human being running on that amount of alcohol with no food does. So the insanity for me is that I keep picking up. given sufficient reason to not after what happened the time before. But Mike, so again, I put me in here because I like to really hit home that they're talking about me in here, and they really are. Drinks essentially because he likes the effect produced by alcohol. And this is one of the things I do love about Bill's story later. He talks about the progression. And over and over and over, you see feeling drink, feeling drink, feeling drink. Bill uses the words, I discovered liquor. And for me, like, I relate to that. Finding alcohol at 11, feeling like life was just something miserable to be endured, was like finding the Holy Grail for me. It was something amazing that I discovered. And he also uses the word the thrill. You know, the thrill. Alcohol was a thrill for a long time for me. But what ended up happening was the effect produced by alcohol was it took away what I was going through. It took away the pain for me. Whatever I was going through, whatever I was feeling, the effect produced by alcohol was erasing that, obviously temporarily. The sensation, what sensation? That thrill, that effect produced by alcohol is so elusive that while I admit it's injurious, so alcohol is no longer working for me, and I understand that it's causing me serious problems physically, socially, probably mentally. While I admit that, I'm still chasing it. And I cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To Mike, the alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And for me, this means, after a time, I can't differentiate the true from the false. And this means a lot of things to a lot of people. The best way I like to break this down and not seeing the true from the false is my bending of morals and values. Like in a moment when I'm about to steal my best friend's ring or whatever it is, from it's like the only heirloom he has left from his parent. Like in my core, I know that's wrong. But at some point, I'm making it okay. At some point, if I'm actually doing it, I can tell myself it's wrong all I want. But I'm actually doing it. And that's that moment where I can't really differentiate the true from the false for me. I'm now crossing lines and boundaries because that I need what I need so badly that I can't tell the truth from the false. In addition, I just can't tell the truth about myself. I just can't see the truth about myself. That I'm selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and fearful, and that's what drives me. That alcohol isn't doing what I need it to do anymore. And then it says, after a time, this becomes a normal life for me. You know, after a while, I'm doing things on a daily. I remember waking up, and I would, like, I don't believe in God, right? But I would say, God, like, please make it on the world easy on the world today. I don't want to have to commit a felony, but I'm going to get what I need to get. And this becomes normal. This waking up in crazy places, not knowing where my wallet is, you know, wondering where my money went, blood on my shirt, blood on my face. Nothing shocked me anymore, you know. This regularly waking up and my friends looking at me like, dude, do you remember what you did last night? And over again, I hear those words. And I'm like, no, I don't. And I don't tell a lot of stories in here. But the one time I finally realized alcohol was a problem for me, I was living in Washington State. I had run from California. I got off parole and I was convinced California was the problem. But I remember, like, I had an apartment, but I wasn't allowed in any of the bars in the area anymore. And I showed up under the bridge. I would go under the bridge and hang out with the homeless people. I'm an alcoholic. I used other things alcoholically, but I'm an alcoholic. Like, alcohol was the thing I couldn't give up. But I would show up under the bridge with a case of beer, a bottle of whiskey, and some weed. And I was a rock star again, like with the homeless people all of a sudden. But I showed up there one day, and I remember the guy giving me that look. He's like, you can't come around here anymore. And I was like, why? And he goes, don't you remember what happened last night? Those words I heard over and over and over. And I still think I'm okay, you know, that I still think I can control drinking. But basically, he told me you're not allowed around here anymore because you attract police and we don't want police here. And that was the first time that I really realized that my drinking is not normal. I'm like now being evicted from the homeless camp, you know, and I have an apartment. I have an apartment. It's disgusting. You wouldn't let anybody live in it. You wouldn't let a homeless man live in that apartment. You know what I mean? Like, but this has become normal for me. Nothing is like too far for me when it comes to I need to drink. So Mike is restless, irritable, and discontented unless he can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. This is my spiritual malady. This is my spiritual illness. I want more of everything. It's never enough. I'm always in the wrong place. I need to be somewhere else. I'm always trying to go or move or change. I'm just antsy and skittish in my own skin. until I put alcohol into my system. The ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. I don't know if I shared this last week. I remember towards the end of my drinking, I'm walking by a liquor store, and it was another morning that I woke up, pissed off that I woke up, and walking by the liquor store saying, I swear to God, I'm not going to drink again. I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. Over and over and over. And I'm like the Apollo hook. I'm getting dragged into the, like I'm having an out-of-body experience watching myself walk into the liquor store. I'm watching myself buy the alcohol. And the funny thing for me is I get the sense of ease and comfort the minute it's in my hand. I don't even actually need it in my system yet. And that tells me that what's going on is mental, spiritual. You know, again, alcohol, what it does to me physically aside, I already get relief just knowing that the alcohol is in my hand. You know, then I go through a whole process of looking at it and saying, don't do it, don't do it. And then I do it, and you know, I convince myself it's a half a pint, and next thing you know, 5 days later, I'm drunk. So drinks which they see others taking with impunity. And again, why me? You know, now I'm in that why me. You know, I'm in this hopeless circle of I don't want to drink, and I'm drinking. You know, I couldn't buy into the idea that I didn't have a choice of whether or not I was going to drink again. I just couldn't buy into that idea that I was powerless over whether or not I was going to drink. Yet, all the evidence was there. How many times I said, I swear to God, I meant it from the deepest part of my soul. You know, the book talks about, I don't remember where it is, but it says we've tried different ways of swearing off alcohol. It says with an oath, without an oath. Like, I was that guy who actually thought, like, vowing to myself. Like, I vowed to myself that I would never drink again. And that was something that I thought had real power. Yet there I was within hours drinking again. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. And that just like is a stick in my gut. I see other people drinking and enjoying it and they're laughing and I'm watching the commercials and that's not my experience. But I want it so desperately. After they have succumbed to the desire again, so after I've again drank, right? I've been overpowered. My willpower has been overpowered by this obsession. As many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops. Again, that allergy. What sets me apart from normal drinkers. Once I start, I can't stop. You hear a slogan. I don't hear it that much lately. One is too many, as a thousand is never enough. And I hear people say that. And it's probably my ego. I always wonder, do they know what they're really describing there? That's the phenomenon of craving. It's not that I want a thousand. It's that like my body wants a thousand. I have no choice. I only want like 4 or 5 or 10. But it's over. Forgive this analogy. I heard somebody say this. Like, once I start drinking, it's like sex with a 500-pound gorilla. It's over when the gorilla says it's over. That was drinking for me. They pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. I won't do it again. I won't do it again. And you know, most alcoholics I know really identify with this. I'm in this infinity circle. This happens to me. With a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless Mike can experience an entire psychic change, spiritual experience, there's very little hope of his recovery. And I never read this trying to fit people into it. Like, I'm not trying to convince you that this is you. But if you believe this is you, if you identify with this, you might be suffering from something that only a spiritual experience, what does it use here? I don't know. It says overcome, very different. It says of his recovery in this spot. So, do I need a spiritual experience? On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. And so, break this down, and I also want to go dig into Appendix 2. It talks about spiritual experience, and it gives me many different words, interchangeable words for that. Because I had a big problem with, like, realm of the spirit, spiritual experience, czar of the universe. I had a big problem with a lot of these words that you guys were using, specifically the word God. And again, I haven't said, and I won't tell you guys what I believe this power greater than myself to be. I say God because everybody knows what I'm talking about. It's nice and simple. But when I got here, I was very antagonistic towards anything in that area. And what I really had to learn was that we were talking about a change. And I'll talk about that when I get to spiritual experience. So it says, on the other hand, as strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once this change, the psychic change, the spiritual experience, whatever you want to call it, spiritual awakening has occurred. Mike, who seemed doomed, has so many problems he ever despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. And for me, those few simple rules, if we want to get literal, few is 3, 10, 11, and 12. I've had the psychic change really in 1 through 9 and learning to practice 10 and 11. My sponsor had me doing a very, very primal 10 and 11 from the beginning. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but in the morning he told me to ask God for guidance. And at night he told me to briefly review my day and thank God. So I want to move, and I don't remember exactly where it refers us to Appendix 2, but I think it's page 567. We're going to turn to the back. Appendix 2, is it 567? Anybody want to help me with that? Yeah, 567. Spiritual experience, and to me I have written on this, equals change. So it says the terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change, and I have underlined, highlighted all the interchangeable words for this, so spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, personality change, sufficient to bring about recovery from alcohol has manifested itself among us in many different forms. And I talked about that word manifest last week. So for me, it sort of means to come to life. If I envision a house, if that house actually gets built, that's the manifestation of my vision. It's the real, the thing become real. So recovery from alcoholism becomes real among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. So they're also saying here to me, when you read this book, it's easy to think that you need to have that white light electric moment where everything changes and you know it's changed and you've recovered. And what they're saying here to me, and again, not to like oversimplify or talk to anybody like they're dumb. I just read this the same with everybody, how it was read to me. But what they're saying is that's not necessarily true. Many of you will have this slow process, this slow recovery, the quote-unquote educational variety that often other people notice in you first, why you've really changed, what happened. So if you haven't had that white light moment, that electric moment, that doesn't mean it didn't work, isn't working. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes, there's another word you can use for spiritual experience, sudden revolutionary change, are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, again, the impression that you have to have that moment, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness. Again, there's another word you could use, God consciousness. Followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Again, if you need to, use that as spiritual experience. Vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, there's another word, change, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety. So he's actually saying that most of us experience the educational variety, this slower process that we don't always have a moment where we realize that everything's changed. Because they develop slowly over a period of time, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes he has undergone a profound alteration, change, in his reaction to life. I actually should have "in reaction to his life" underlined with that, I think. For me, profound alteration in his reaction to life. Because isn't that really what my recovery is today? It's a profound alteration in my reaction to life. Things haven't gotten a whole lot better. My reaction to them have gotten worlds better. My acceptance of things that come at me has changed completely. As a result, things seem to get better after that. But it's my reaction that changes first. What often takes place in a few months, not years, could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline, self-will, self-propulsion. Doesn't work for me. And I say a few months, I'm not in a hurry for anybody to recover or anything like that, but what I'm saying is you can recover quickly. Do what works for you. And I say this all the time. Like, I'm not here to tell anybody how they have to do this or what they're supposed to do. I'm just here to share with you what worked for me. And you probably have, 35 people in this room. And of those that have recovered, if we sat and compared our experiences, they'd be different with the same words. Some people wrote in the four-step this way, and some people wrote it that way. And at the end of the day, are you at peace today? And are you not drinking alcohol because of that peace? Fantastic. I'm not here to separate from anybody. With few exceptions, our members found that they have tapped an unexpected inner resource. That could be a spiritual awakening. Which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves, that could also be a change, is the essence of the spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in light of our experience can recover. So if you're capable of getting honest, in our experience, you can recover, no matter what you've been through. Provided, here's a condition, or if, he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable, meaning they're what I need, but they're also what I can't do without. I need to be honest, willing, and open-minded. And I've got really good news. When I got here, I was only capable of one of those, and that was willing. I actually learned how to have an open mind through 2 years of sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous saying, no, 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 no. You're not going to push God on me, of thinking I was going to do this my way, and I don't need your book or your sponsorship or your phone number. I learned willingness through a bad mangling via alcohol and an open mind. I learned those two. I had the willingness at the end. But I learned the open mind, and I learned honesty. I wasn't capable of honesty. Like, I had a buddy, and actually a guy I sponsored, and he says this so beautifully. He's like, I told my dad today that I had pizza for lunch. He's like, I had chicken. Like, I just lied a lie. Like, it's just what comes out of my mouth. No good reason when I get here. And it's just this web, and I'm always trying to protect something. And you know, the beautiful thing about only sharing my experience now is I don't have to remember stuff. You know, the experiences that I've had become ingrained in me. My short-term memory is horrible. But those experiences that I've had, for the most part, are there. They're locked in, and I don't have to think too much about them. I don't have to worry about what I said yesterday. It's a beautiful thing. But if you don't think you're honest or capable of honesty deep down in your soul, that's okay. You can learn it. And, you know, I guess you can make the argument in those 2 years somewhere I had to learn willingness, too, because I was willing to do anything but. So, but we need these things in the end. There is a principle, and this is one of my favorite lines in the whole book. There is a principle, an idea, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot... I love that so far. I'm like, ooh, you have for me proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep me in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. And that's what I had for a long time. This really opened my mind. If I keep saying absolutely no, never, and I never try it, how do I know? I was convinced this book wouldn't work for me without actually trying it. So this principle, this idea that will keep me in everlasting ignorance, and I will never learn anything, and I will never lose an argument, is this contempt. I already know before I try it. And this really opened my mind for me, reading this with my sponsor. This really opened my mind. That's me. It's not going to work for me because I'm not trying it. How do I know? But at the end, I had to get to a spot where I had tried everything I could fathom. So, moving back to... We're going to go to Roman numeral XXX. And again, I want to say, like, none of these pages are unimportant. Like, I go back, I read through this the way I read through it. I actually go from page 88, I jump to Vision for You. And then I go back and read Working with Others, To the Wise, Families, etc. And then I go back and I read all the prefaces and forewords as I go through traditions and concepts with my sponsees. And I always give this example, and I feel like I'm like lightening the importance of Bill's story. I don't read Bill's story with my sponsees. It's a phenomenal, there's good stuff in there. the progression and how he drank over how he felt. But I'm trying to get them to a four-step right now. And I had a guy who was I found a temporary sponsor use at 5 years. And that was, I moved here, my old sponsor had went out, and before I like really locked into a guy, I asked the guy to temporary sponsor me. And he shared with me that if you go back like before the 70s, a lot of the four steps were written on like a diner napkin or a business card. That it was really about getting to that stuff that's killing me and eating me up. You know, when I write a four-step, and I'll talk more about this when we get to the four-step, I can write 2,000 things on my four-step and leave out one, and the one is the one I was trying to get to. The one that I leave out is the one I'm trying to get to. Now, again, I hear things, and I'm like, you're killing people with that, writing a four-step on a dinner napkin. This guy's sober 23 years and at peace. He's sober and not drinking, two separate things to me. So I stay open to other people's experiences. And again, I do a thorough, you know, four-step. I have pages and pages and pages and pages. But whatever, like do what works for you. Find your peace. So Roman numeral XXX, and I like to read down towards the bottom all these. And we're talking about the different type of alcoholics. And we'll just actually move up the paragraph. So we're talking about the different types of drinkers. The type of man who is unwilling to admit he cannot drink. He plans various ways of drinking. He changes his brand or his environment. There's a type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take drink without danger. So these are the different types of alcoholics. There's the manic depressive type who is perhaps the least understood by his friends, about whom a whole chapter could be written. And then there are the types entirely normal in every respect, except in the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. And this is me. I'm really good at a lot of things. And when I set my mind to something, I could really do it. But for whatever reason, when it comes to alcohol, I have zero power. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Something I had a big problem with. So now you may go, whoa, we are actually going to move up to page 24. Again, I don't mean to devalue the stuff that we're moving by. This is just how I do it. I sit for about 3.5 to 4 hours with the sponsee, and we talk about the threefold illness, about powerlessness and unmanageability, and they think it's possible that a spiritual awakening via these 12 steps might bring them to a power greater than themselves that could relieve their alcoholism. And they go home and they start on that. And if you actually look in the fourth step, it's sort of, and I hear people say that this is where the steps start, and I don't know, but that's sort of where we begin, right? We begin this house cleaning in 4 through 9. We begin the recovery process after understanding, believing that maybe, and then making a decision to do it. So the top of page 24, at a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop is of absolutely no avail. And I usually say, are you there? You know? This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it's suspected. Many of us are alcoholics so long before we know it, right? Because we still have to do all that trying, like, God, to admit I was an alcoholic. Those were fighting words to me. I literally almost got into a fight in a bar. Now, I would joke about it. I'd be fall over pissing in a bush, and you know, people would walk by looking at me crazy. I'd be like, don't worry about me, I'm an alcoholic. But if you called me an alcoholic or to really admit that I was an alcoholic, there's no way. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. And again, I had a problem with this. Yet, all the evidence is there. No matter how badly I don't want to drink, I want to drink. And I don't knock other people's slogans. Again, I have a mentor of mine. He's 20 years sober. And he says, no matter what, just don't drink. And that's great. That works for him. But for me, no matter what, I just drank. And again, him and I carry exactly the same message. He just has a different experience with those words, and that's fine. And today I could say, you know, no matter what goes wrong in my life, I don't drink. But as a newcomer with no context of that, when I hear you tell me no matter what, just don't drink, I'm like, dang, no matter what, I just drink. Doesn't matter where I got to be tomorrow. Doesn't matter where I got to be tomorrow. And for whatever reason, it seems more important where I have to be tomorrow is the better chance of me drinking. And I don't know if it's because I get anxiety or what. Doesn't matter if it's something where I want to be really badly or don't want to be really badly but have to. I don't seem to make it. Because I've lost the power of choice. And once I start drinking, I don't know where it's going. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. And I used to hear people that, I don't know, it's more common in New York, I don't hear it that much here, people say, play the tape through. And that never worked for me. Like, I never played the tape through. How is this going to go? No, because my mind says it's going to be different this time. It has to be different. I need alcohol. When I get to that point, after 9 days of not drinking, and I've fought hard and white-knuckled it. Thanks. Sorry. Lost my train of thought. I've got to drink. I have no choice. Like, I had a buddy. And again, this is to the, like, no matter what, just don't drink. I had a buddy in New York, and he's got about 4 years now. We came in together, and so he fought this whole process for 5 or 6 years. And I remember being about 8 months sober. And he said to me, Mike, I'm going to drink or I'm going to blow my brains out. And like, this dude's a marksman. He's got pistols and guns all over his house. And I said to him, Chris, why don't you go drink? Guy's recovered alcoholic now, you know, 4 or 5 years or whatever he is into it now. But one of the things, one of the mistakes I made in Alcoholics Anonymous for quite a while was trying to convince people not to drink. And the book never says don't drink. In fact, there's a couple times where the book says, go try this, go try that, go find out your truth. You know, I'm not here to tell anybody to drink either. What I'm saying is I have to find out for myself and believe in my core without a doubt that I'm powerless over alcohol, that I'm not in charge and I don't have any control over it, and that I'm not doing any of this recovery thing. The only thing I'm doing is surrendering to a process that I know nothing about. And letting God take over my life. And so again, I feel like I keep going all over the place. But anyways, I'm unable, and I like that at certain times. For me, it's sort of the reverse. At certain times, I am able to stop drinking. And boy, the kind of trouble that buys me, because all of a sudden, I'm like, see, I'm not powerlessness. And that can seriously carry me for a whole nother year of drinking. Like, God, how am I going to get that back? There was that one night 9.5 months ago where I got the perfect buzz and I was able to go home. But the majority of time, so I use those at certain times, I actually was able to. But towards the end, the last couple of years of my drinking, it just never went that way. And I'm never able to bring with sufficient force. Like I may say, remember what happened, but never am I able to bring that strong enough to prevent me from drinking this time. When the obsession is on me, when I'm in pain or not liking how I'm feeling or in an uncomfortable place, I'm never able to strongly enough bring the history, bring the track record to be able to stop me and say, dude, this is nuts. What are you doing? I say that a lot of times after, you know, the night when I wake, the morning when I wake up after a 5-day run, like, dude, what are you doing? But never when I'm about to drink am I able to stop myself strongly enough with what happened before, specifically towards the end. We are without defense against the first drink. So again, the thought to drink comes, and it, for me it starts like the grain of sand in the back of my head. And once that grain of sand is there, it's over. Sometimes I can fight it for 2 or 3 days. But at the end of the day, I have no defense against drinking. Once that thought that I need to drink comes into my head, I have never in my life defeated it. And somebody said to me in the beginning, you know, once you stop fighting, the war's over. And that was sort of more geared towards once I stop fighting the book and sponsorship and really surrendering. But it's true. Like, once I stopped fighting, there was no more fighting in my life. But when it comes to alcohol, I have no defense. I'm powerless. I can't choose whether or not I'm going to drink. And I have to understand that. I have to accept that. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they're hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There's a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. Right? And how many times I convince myself it'll just be a half a pint this time. You know? Or like trying to wean myself off alcohol is the funniest thing I've ever done. You know? I'm like, I'm going to have a pint today, half a pint tomorrow, and an airplane bottle the next day. And it just doesn't, you know. Right. And once that pint's in me, like I'm telling you, once the first sip is on me, like I might as well get in a sprinter stance in front of a brick wall. Give it about 100 feet. Because that's how it goes for me. And again, like the insanity, again, is what we're talking about before I drink. You know, the whole hot stove. The first time I took my daughter, I have an 18-month-old, when she was 18 months, she's 6 now. And I would never teach her this intentionally, but I'm trying to tell her over and over and over, Daddy's coffee is hot. And I'm at Starbucks one day, and I got a black coffee in my hand, and she just dunks her hand right in it. She never touched my coffee cup again, ever. You'd think with alcohol, I'd learn the same lesson. Again, it was like the greatest lesson ever. You know, because she's always trying to grab everything off tables and this and that. And I would never intentionally teach her that way. But she learned what hot meant immediately. I never learned that with alcohol. The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time, here's how. And again, that's the insanity. Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. Right? And again, like this is just something I have to experience. You can't sit here and tell me this. Like I had to have this experience. I'm like a scientist and I try every experiment 3 to 5 times. You know, every way of controlling my drinking. And that's just what I had to do. I believe that I had to have every drop that I had. You know, and alcoholic comes in and they had 6 months or 9 months and they're still on their 4-step or a year and a half later and they haven't done their 4-step and they go out and we go, oh my gosh. And no wonder they're so ashamed. I hug them and say, of course you did. That's what we do. That's what alcoholics do. You know, or the chronic relapsers. You know, I keep wanting to drop a local sponsee's name because you guys all know who he is. And like 2 years later, this dude's amazing. But every time he went out, I hugged him and I said, of course you went out. Your alcoholism's not treated. You know, it's funny. Alcoholism is like the only disease that I know of that's going to get treated. One way or another, my internal condition is going to get treated, whether it's with alcohol or sex or whatever, or God. But it's going to get treated. I can't handle how I feel inside. How often if some of us began to drink in this nonchalant way and after the third or fourth pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, for God's sake, how'd I ever get started again? Sound familiar? Over and over and over and over. Only to have that thought supplanted, replaced by, well, I'll stop with the sixth drink. Or what's the use anyhow? You know how many last hurrahs I had? Like my thing is, so again, I go buy a half a pint, and I'm like, this is all I'm having, and then I get a couple sips in me, and like I don't even feel anything yet, but my mind just goes, screw it, this is your last hurrah. Like this is your last one, you know, I've said that 1,000 times. So you might as well, like again, we're talking about alcohol, my love of my life, like, this is my last time, my good friend, so let's just really do it right, you know? And again, it's like I get in a sprinter stance and I head for a brick wall, you know, every time, like over and over and over. When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid and unless locked up may die or go permanently insane. And this is what they did back then. They locked you up. Why wouldn't they? Me drinking? Why wouldn't they? These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history. But for the grace of God, there have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop but cannot. And that's where I had to get to. Like if wanting it was enough, I would have stopped a long time ago. The problem is I don't believe you. I'm not buying in. I'm not convinced. Like, I had to try everything else but this. There's, like, literally books out there written how to get sober without AA. Like, that's me. That's how badly I want to not do what you're telling me to do. I never actually bought the book because I didn't know it existed, but I would have bought that. I would have bought that book, How to Get Sober Without AA, or Without God. There is a solution. Woo! God, I love that. There is a solution. But we're talking about pretty hopeless stuff here, right? And I'm identifying. I'm like, this is me. They wrote this book about me. And that solution is God. And so let's say a solution, meaning one. Power greater than yourself, higher power, whatever you want to call it. But that is my solution today. And, you know, I spent my first 2 years in AA believing and telling you that this was the solution. This is the thing that points me to the solution. And again, I've softened up through taking a lot of arrows in my back and a lot of ego and telling other people what they need to do. There's probably other programs out there that work. I don't know. I've said this many times, though. Like, God is not confined to this book. Is there a man out in the jungle somewhere who's never seen a book, but he knows how to crush grapes and he's an alcoholic? Can God get him sober? I think so. But that's not AA. So in AA, we talk about AA. But we also don't have a monopoly on God, which is the solution. So anyways, almost none of us, and again, the musts and have to start, if you decide to take this treatment, our prescription, then here's how you take the prescription. You know, once you decide to do this process, there is a way to do it. Almost none of us, and again, I love reading this. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcoming, which the process requires for its successful consummation. So, nobody really cares that you don't want to do this. Don't do it. If you don't want to do the 12 steps, don't. But when you find that nothing else has worked, it's possible that this will. But yeah, it's going to require this. You know, and I don't mean to be harsh again, but like sometimes we super coddle the newcomer. I got someone, I don't want to mention names or anything, but there was, and it's nobody in here, but like there's this woman that one of my sponsees is sponsoring, and there's this whole, like she's out there using men and treating alcoholism and this and that. And her sponsor like gave it to her straight. Like, here's the deal. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're willing to, like, you flake over and over and over. You're not willing to come do this work now, but I bet if it was free alcohol, if it was open bar, you'd be there. And people are like, and again, this was a text that was public that was shared with many people. I'm not sharing private information. But people were so upset with like, saying, how could you say that to the newcomer? And well, first of all, not a newcomer. Been coming around for 6 months. You know, and is it the truth? Like, you are not going to be okay, and you're not a victim. And it's different if it's a man out there sleeping with women, right? Is it? So, like my job in Alcoholics Anonymous is to tell people the truth. That's my job in here. You don't have to want to do this. Don't do it. You don't have to like doing this. Like, no, I don't want to do this. I still don't want to do it when I get sick and I'm misbehaving. I don't want to get honest about it. But dude, you've been doing it. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's done. There are lots of people who have been victimized in here, and that's a whole other issue. I've never been victimized. So everything I've ever done, and again, this is for me, I need to get real with it. I don't have time to play around anymore. Anyway, sorry, I felt like I went on a tangent. But we saw that it really worked in others. And we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence which we had not even dreamed. So that's sort of step two for me. Like, you don't really have to want to do this. I'm going to back it up and be a little more gentle. I feel like I got really harsh there, and hope I didn't offend anybody. And I don't really apologize much. In fact, often I say, if I make you uncomfortable, you're welcome. Because we learn how to get, you know, comfortable and uncomfortability in here. But I had to believe that, like, life as I've been living, it was just, like, I've tried everything. There is nothing left. This is the last thing. And not everybody has to get there. Some people, this is the third or fourth thing they try, but they have that desperation and they dive into it. So when, therefore, approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, and this is me when I'm working with a newcomer, I let them know, like, the drink problem has been solved for me. You know, I'm not cured. But it's been solved. Like, the riddle is unwound. The problem is me. And if I go to God with all of me, there is no more drinking problem. There's nothing left for us but to pick up this simple kit of spiritual tools, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have many tools in here, but they pretty much all fall under the 12 steps, right? And I love the gentleness of it's just laid at our feet, like here it is. And this is how, you know, what I've tried to do from the beginning here is say, like, here, like this is what I did. I don't know what you have to do, but here's what I did. And we found much of having been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. And I thought that sounded so corny. But I think Bill was just trying to describe, like, this is something that I can't really put into words. Like, I just wanted to stop drinking. And again, I have a friend who says, like, if I told you to, like, on day one, to write what you wanted out of recovery and lock in a safe for 10 years, you really do these 12 steps and live by these spiritual principles in 10 years, you'd say, thank God I didn't only get that. Like, you would have sold yourself short by 1,000, right? I mean, I had no idea that I could not only not drink, but be at peace and not obsess over it and have joy in my life and sleep well at night in my own bed. You know, like, I had no idea. And so it is like this fourth dimension. I live a life today that I didn't dream was ever possible. And again, that's stuff aside. That's like my inner, when I'm working this program, when I'm really close to God, my inner feeling, my peace, my okayness. The worst my days ever are is okay. And I would have killed to wake up okay once. I would have done anything to just feel okay when I woke up one time. So we'll wrap up with, I'm going to read through in the top line of the next page. The great fact is just this and nothing less for me, that I have had a deep and effective spiritual experience. Awakening, whatever you want to, you know, use, a change, which has revolutionized my whole attitude toward life, toward my fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. So, earlier on, it also talks about grasping onto this flimsy reed that ends up being the loving hand of God. And that's where I was at. I was willing to grasp on anything. I was willing to say, listen, I don't really believe this will work for me, but I'll try it. And now the central fact, the most important fact in my life, the fact that everything else revolves around is this idea that God's got me. So this idea that I really fought and didn't want is the most important thing in my life today, and it's what everything else works off when I'm doing well. I feel like I'm going a little bit over, so I'm going to wrap it up. All right. If you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle-of-the-road solution. No middle-of-the-road. I don't get to do this halfway. Again, that thing that I leave out in my fourth step is the thing that's killing me. Later on, and I practice 10-11 half the time or five nights a week. Like, but it's amazing how many people I meet who, and that's do you. If it works, work it. But, like, I read this book literally. Like, this tells me I need to pray and meditate every single day. And when I don't, I pay. And I meet a lot of people who just don't do 11 on a daily basis. And I'm like, listen, if that works for you, fine. But, is it really working for you? And again, don't answer me. That's for you to ask yourself. I know once I don't practice like step 11 for like 2 days, that's it. I'm done for like 6 months and I'm sick. Like I've had that happen a couple times. It's different when there's a morning where I cannot. We're on vacation and I don't get the spot. I do my prayer still, but I don't get the 20 minutes that I usually spend. But if I do that for 2, 3, 4 days, I'm not going back to it until I get in enough pain. Because 20 minutes with God is a whole lot of time for me. I'm a busy guy, you know. Anyways, we were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. And I am going to leave it there. And we'll talk about the two alternatives, which wraps up step one sort of for me. Those are my two questions. We'll talk a little bit more about a couple more things. That's all I got for now.